OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom, and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Lech Lecha, Aliyah Shabbat. We will talk about that a lot. Recording and first broadcast is the sixth day of Mar Cheshvan, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the sixth of Mar Cheshvan, 5772, corresponds this year to the 3rd of November. Get to the significance of the 6th of Mar Cheshvan here in Israel, but a quick rundown of November 3rd. It is Culture Day in Japan, Victory Day in the Maldives, National Day in Panama, and Independence Day in Dominica. Now you know. So we'll do the 6th of Cheshvan, Mar Cheshvan, but not yet. First, let us say Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tihyena oznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Imavonot tishmor ya Adonai mi ya'amod ki imacha hasalicha lema'an tivarei. Kiviti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvoro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim l'boker, shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael, mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha'umedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem, ויוציאים מצרה לרווחה ומאפלה לאורה ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב ונאמר אמן. Okay, I promised to tell you about the 6th of Mar Cheshvan, and I shall do that right now. The Mishnah in Ta'anit asks, from when do we start mentioning God as the rainmaker? The answer is, the halacha is, even though there's a dispute in the Mishnah, the answer is from the last day of Sukkot, meaning the day we call Shmini Atzeret, and here in Israel we also call it Simchat Torah. Then it asks, from when do we ask for rain? The rule that the Mishnah sets down at the end is, you start asking for rain at the beginning of the rainy season, when you need rain, when you want rain, when it rains. And that is defined in Israel. The first opinion says the 3rd of Cheshvan. Rabban Gamliel says the 7th of Mar Cheshvan. I keep saying Cheshvan by mistake. I told you last week I am convinced by a feedback that I got from a listener and a reader, that the use of the term Cheshvan is a mistake. The name of the month is Mar Cheshvan, and it does not break up as Mar and Cheshvan, where people broke off the Mar. And as I mentioned last week, I checked the Gemara, I checked Rashi, I checked the Rambam. They only use the term Mar Cheshvan. Cheshvan seems to have crept in later, and it really doesn't belong. So I have a lifelong habit of saying Cheshvan. I try to correct as often as I can to Mar Cheshvan and make the point. Anyway, the Mishnah's conclusion, the Halacha's conclusion, is that in Eretz Yisrael we start asking for rainfall on the 7th of Mar Cheshvan, which is tonight at Arvit. That's what's special about the 6th of Mar Cheshvan. It's the end of the Vitein Bracha period, And starting in Arvit tonight, we start saying, V'tein tal umatar livracha. That's the petition for rain. Outside of Israel, the practice is to wait until the beginning of December this year, because the coming year is a leap year. It works out to December 6th. That's the beginning of the V'tein tal umatar period outside of Israel. Historically, it is due to the fact that the rules were set in Babel, Babylonia, which is now parts of Iraq and parts of Iran, ironically. And they did not need rainfall at the earlier point of the beginning of Mar Cheshvan. They needed it only 2 months after the fall, and that came to the end of November, which, because of the switch from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar, got pushed a day, a century roughly, and we're now at December 5th or 6th for Chutz La'aretz. Now, let me give you a very picky, tiny, far-fetched situation, but it has a point. So follow me on this. The rule of thumb is that people in Israel say V'tein tal umatar livracha, ask for rainfall from the 7th of Mar Cheshvan, and those in Chutz La'aretz begin in December, as I just mentioned. What about a visitor from Chutz La'aretz, like an American, a Brit, that is here in Israel today, and he's going to be here tonight, and he's going to hear in shul the announcement, start saying V'tein tal umatar livracha. Does he do what we do here in Israel? Or, because he's here now, or does he still maintain his status as an outsider, a Chutz La'aretz person, and does not begin until the beginning of December? The original rule was, if someone is here for a year, or at least for the full season, meaning till after Pesach, then he would adopt our practice of saying V'tein tal umatar livracha from tonight. And if he's only here on a short visit, he would not. He would do like the people back from where he comes from do. Okay. A later psak, the one that we actually wrote in Torah Tidbits this week, is that a person who is here in Israel tonight and hears the announcement of V'tein tal umatar livracha should not insert it in the place where it belongs, the bracha called Borech Aleinu, but at a later point in the Amidah, in the bracha known as Shema Koleinu, Shomea Tefillah, which is a summary petition to God to hear our prayers, and it is a secondary location for the petition for rainfall with the words V'tein tal umatar livracha. And since the person is returning to the States or wherever in a short period of time, he is not considered yet a Ben Eretz Yisrael, an Israeli for this purpose, and continues the regular petition for a blessing, but not for rainfall, in the proper place, the Borech Aleinu, the bracha called Hashanim, but because he's here, and because we could use his prayer, we tell him to say V'tein tal umatar livracha in Shema Koleinu. Now, this is not the picky little point that I wanted to mention to you. Here it is. An Israeli who goes abroad for more than a year stops following the 7th of Mar Cheshvan schedule and accepts for himself the local practice of the beginning of December. Here's the situation that is addressed by a halachic authority. Such a student, 2 years in Spain someplace, studying whatever, lives in a region that really needs rain now. The people, Jews in his region, do not petition for rainfall until the beginning of December, even though they want it to rain already now. He should be following the local custom, beginning of December. But because they need rain, if he still has ties in Israel, like his family lives in Israel, and he's planning on returning even after 2 years, then he alone is allowed to say V'tein Talu Matar Livracha according to the Israel schedule beginning the 7th of Mar Cheshvan. I hope you followed that, because you don't have to remember it. If it ever comes up, you'll ask a question. But the point in it, I think, is profound and very powerful. One person, one Jew, has the power of prayer to say V'tein Talu Matar Livracha, not just in the general way where we're asking for beneficial rain for Eretz Yisrael and for everybody, but for his own new adopted community, that temporary two-year community, where none of the local people can say it because the rule is beginning of Cheshvan, of December. But he has a way of stretching the point. He has ties to Israel. After all, he is an Israeli, and even though he would generally not begin petition for rainfall, he's allowed to do it when his new community needs rain. Again, I hope you followed this. I'm not going to go over it, and I hope that I made it reasonably clear to follow, because the point is essential. Every single person counts. I ran into somebody yesterday who lives in the States. He's here for a couple of days. He's going back tonight. That's Thursday night when we start saying V'tein Talu Matar Livracha. If he gets on the plane without having davened Ma'ariv, then when he davens Ma'ariv, he says V'tein Bracha, and that's it, because that's what Chutz La'aretz people say. If he catches Ma'ariv here before he gets onto the plane, he will hear a pound on the table and the words V'tein Talu Matar Livracha, and everybody else in the shul starts to say V'tein Talu Matar Livracha tonight, as people who live in Israel, and he joins them in Shema Kolenu. When he gets up to Shema Kolenu, he says V'tein Talu Matar Livracha. Then he goes to the airport and gets on a plane. What does he do tomorrow morning at Shacharit in New York? He continues saying V'tein Talu Matar Livracha in Shema Kolenu. And he goes through that through December 5th. And then when everybody in the States switches to V'tein Talu Matar Livracha, he continues saying it in Baruch Aleinu. But he ends up with a month and a half of prayer. Less than a month. Approximately a month, a little more than a month. He ends up with a little more than a month of three times a day, every weekday, being able to say V'tein Talu Matar Livracha for us in Israel, one person, because every little bit of prayer counts. That's the message. That's why I'm talking about this. And I can't stop being fascinated by it by myself. And I wanted to share that. In the same light, what happens when a person forgets to say V'tein Talu Matar Livracha here, tonight, tomorrow, the next day, not the next day would be Shabbat, the day after, anytime till Pesach. If you don't say V'tein Talu Matar Livracha, your Amidah is invalid. Wait a minute. If you forget the two words, Talu Matar, dew and rain, then what you're left with is what you say all the time during the summertime, V'tein Beracha, give a blessing. That doesn't sound bad. That's what you usually say. Just because you forgot to say the two words, Tal Umatar, the halacha says your entire Amidah, 19 blessings, are in vain, and you are required to repeat the entire Amidah, making sure you do say Tal Umatar the second time. And again, why? I might have thought, you missed Tal Umatar once, don't worry, you asked for a blessing anyway. Other people are davening and asking for Tal Umatar, be careful next time. We say that on Chanukah, if a person does not say Al HaNisim in the Amidah, we say to him, make sure you make it the next time, but there's no repair for it. You don't have to repeat, you're not allowed to repeat. The Amidah is accepted. When it's missing the two words Tal Umatar, starting tonight in Israel and starting the beginning of December outside of Israel, the Amidah is not only defective, it's negative, and it's as if you never said it. And you have to repeat the entire thing. Again, the question is why, and the answer is the same. Because every bit of prayer counts. A corollary to all that I'm saying is, when a person davens, he should daven with kavanah. Of course, that goes almost without saying, although you can't say anything goes without saying if you're going to say it, that a person should always have thought, intention, motive when he davens, when he prays. But this highlights that idea, because we have the halachic rules indicating that it matters. It matters. And a scoffer would say, do you think it makes a difference? All I said was, v'tein bracha, give us a blessing. What do you think I mean? I mean rain. No, you didn't say it the way our sages composed you to say it. Tal umatar. V'tein tal umatar. Livracha. And therefore, you have to repeat it, and you have to do it right, and you have to do it with meaning, and you have to do it with feeling. Enough said, I guess. Did I say enough said? I take that back. One more thing. What if an American, here in Israel now, a couple of days, a week, davens Ma'ariv tonight, goes to a shul, a guy pounds on the table and says Tal Umatar, and he begins to say V'tein Tal Umatar Livracha in the regular place, Baruch Aleinu. What does he do? The answer is he continues, even though he's wrong. He started, we tell him, don't stop. That's the power of prayer. Now I'll leave the topic, and we'll continue with Parshat HaShavua. I have a song from an album I just bought yesterday, by Yonatan Sheinfeld, a young fellow with a beautiful voice. I think I've played some of his songs from an earlier album. This is a new album. And among the 10 songs on the album is one called Lech Lecha, and it has text from this week's Torah reading. So I'm glad I got it yesterday, I'm glad I listened to it yesterday afternoon, and I'm glad I'm going to be able to present it now. The words come from the first chapter in the Sedra. It's two different psukim. The song puts them together, so I will share them both with you and expand them a little. And God spoke or said to Avram. He's called Avram. He hasn't had his name changed to Avraham yet, but I probably will say Avraham. God says to him, Lech lecha me'artzecha u'mimoladetecha u'mibeit avicha. Go from your land and from your birthplace and from your father's home, el ha'aretz, to the land asher areka, the land I will show you where to go. You do that, and the verses continue, not the song. Ve'e'esecha legoy gadol, I will make you into a large nation. Va'avorechecha, and I will bless you. Va'agadla shemecha, and I will elevate your name. Ve'ye bracha, and it will be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you, and all people of the land will be blessed because of you. The next verse, Vayelech Avram Kasher Diber Hashem Elav Hashem. Avram goes as God commanded him. This is the first Aliyah. People speak of the first Aliyah as 100 years ago, 150 years ago, 200 years ago. The first Aliyah was over 4,000 years ago when Avraham Avinu was commanded to go to the land. The land at that time was known as Canaan. It later becomes Eretz Yisrael. The verse continues that his nephew Lot went with him, and Avraham takes his wife Sarai, later to become Sarah, and Lot, and all of their possessions, and also the nefesh asher asu v'charan, the souls which they had won over to belief in one God in Haran, where they preached monotheism, and they set out to go to the land of Canaan, and they arrive in the land of Canaan. Now, earlier, let's go back a step. God could have said to Avram, go to the land which I will show you. He didn't have to say, from your land, from your birthplace, from your father's home. That makes the leaving harder. When you realize you're picking up stakes, you're leaving your land, you're leaving your father's home, your homeland, and that's part of what's involved in coming on Aliyah. People have to realize that they are giving up things. Now, in the case of Avram, it always struck me odd that he would really care about leaving a place where he was ridiculed and persecuted and thrown into a fiery furnace for his beliefs and for preaching his beliefs and was public enemy number one. And yet, Jewish history has shown us how often Jews are hated in their countries and are expelled and come back and feel for it. It's something which most of us can relate to on some level or another. I left Brooklyn a long time ago and went to Queens. I left New York City 30 years ago to come on Aliyah. I have feelings for the place. I have feelings for the people I left behind. And yet, I believe it's a fulfillment of doing God's bidding and God's desire and will to come live in Eretz Yisrael. Anyone who reads Torah Tidbits or listens to Torah Tidbits audio should not be surprised that I feel that way. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. My never-ending search for fun things to play as little intros. That was the theme music. Did anyone guess? You're hearing it behind my voice now. The theme music from Murder, She Wrote with Angela Lansbury. Okay, back to your holded thought, your held thought. We're in the middle of introducing the song. It's taking us a while. The first part of the song is Lech Lecha Me'artzecha Umimolartecha Mi'Beit Avicha El Ha'aretz Asher Areka. Go from your land, your birthplace, your father's home, to the land which I will show you. A little bit later in Parshat Lech Lecha, V'Hashem Omar El Avram Acharei Hipored Lot Me'imo, after Lot went his way and Avraham was now alone, again with his wife of course, Sarah, Imenu, Sa eina einecha ure, lift your eyes and see, min hamakom asher atasham, from the place where you are, to the north, to the south, to the east, and to the west. Here are the words from the song, ki et kol haaretz asher ata roe, for all the land which you see, lecha etenena, to you I will give it, ulezaracha, and to your offspring, Ad Olam, forever. And then it continues, I will make your descendants as many as the grains of sand on earth, And just like no one could count those, no one will be able to count them. Kum hitalech ba'aretz. This is not part of the song, but it's part of the theme. Kum hitalech ba'aretz. Arise and walk the land. L'orka ulorachba. To its length and its width. Ki lecha etenena. Because to you I am giving it. That's basically the theme of Lech Lecha. That's the challenge of Aliyah to each of us, one of Avraham Avinu's descendants. This promise was repeated to Yitzchak and repeated to Yaakov, which is why it's not all of Avraham's descendants that have a claim to this land, but only those that came through the Jewish line from Avraham to Yitzchak to Yaakov. We could discuss that some other time. The point of the song. No, the message of the song, my message from Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Lech Lecha, is primarily that God is revealing to us in the Torah, otherwise he wouldn't bother putting this into the Torah. He is revealing to us his will that the people of the Jewish nation live in the land which he gave to Avraham Avinu, to Yitzchak Avinu, to Yaakov Avinu, and all of his descendants throughout history. This land of Israel belongs by divine right to the Jewish people. It does not belong to anybody else. Period. Unfortunately, I'd like to say, end of story, it's not the end of the story. Because there are people who dispute it. But from the Bible's perspective, from any Bible-believing person, this land is ours. And I'll tell you the truth. I am more interested in all Jews, at least, believing this, because unfortunately there are some bleeding-heart liberals, they are called in some places, or extreme left-wing people, who equivocate when it comes to a statement of rights in this land, and there are some that go further and consider Israel, the Jewish people, to be occupying territory that belongs to someone else, and those people are totally, totally wrong. This land belongs to the Jewish people. This is a message that I'm saying on Torah Tidbits Audio. It's a message that I'm broadcasting via Israel National Radio. It's a message that I'm broadcasting via OU Radio without their permission, but I'm hoping that the OU has this same kind of feeling, and if not, let me be put on the carpet, and I will defend myself any way that I have to. All of this to introduce a song by Yonatan Sheinfeld, Lech Lecha. Enjoy, listen to the message, not just the music, and for those of you who are listening outside of Israel and have not yet started thinking in terms of living here, let this go to your heart, to your soul, not just to your, through your ears and your mind, and hopefully get the message. It's a message that I keep repeating over and over again, and I don't get tired of it, and I hope other people don't either. Yonatan Sheinfeld with Lech Lecha.
לך לך מארצך וממולדתך, כי את כל הארץ אשר אתה רואה לך אתננה, ולזרעך עד עולם.
Before I change subjects within Lech Lecha, let me give you a little current events in Israel. As of November 1st, today is the 3rd, as of the 1st, first of all, the annual law goes into effect that drivers have to keep their headlights on even during the day. This goes from November through April, or until April 1st, I don't remember, either through March or through April. And I watched this morning just out of curiosity, and an overwhelming majority of people haven't yet started doing that, so once they start ticketing, there'll be more people doing it. Anyway, that's not the real exciting news in Jerusalem, and all over, I guess. That is, as of November 1st, the bus systems in the country went over, or at least in Jerusalem, went over to Rav-Kav. Rav-Kav is a plastic magnetic card that now will contain the information of the two discount methods of transportation. One is the Kartisia, which was the 10 rides at a reduced price, or 20 rides, depending on a person's age. And then also the Chodshi Chofshi, the free pass per month. And that paper has disappeared as of November 1st. Anyone who still has the Kartisiot can use them. But officially, everyone is supposed to sign up for this card. There are stands all over the city with long lines for people who haven't done it yet. And some places have very few lines and very small lines. And if anyone is interested, they have to contact me and I'll tell them where to go. Without a line, at least as of yesterday, when I got my second Rav-Kav, replacing one that I lost, that I had gotten months ago. So, you have to put the card into the machine. We learned that you put it on top of the machine. And I tested this morning whether I could actually keep it in my wallet and put my wallet on top of the machine, and sure enough, it reads the card. So that's the way to go now. Just thought you'd like to know. Anyone without a Rav-Kav has to pay the price of a single ride. Okay, so much for current events. The rest you'll have to get from other media sources. Let's get back to Lech Lecha. There's an interesting mix within the Sedra of Lech Lecha of wonderful, positive stories of Avraham Avinu, and a couple of negative kind of things. First up was, shortly after his arrival, the Torah doesn't tell us how long, a famine struck, and Avraham took his wife, Sarah, and they went down to Egypt. And there was an incident with, he said to Sarah, I realize you're a beauty and they're going to probably take you and they'll kill me, so tell them you're my sister and I'm your brother. And that's what happens, and they do take Sarah, and God does not allow anything to happen to her. And when Paro recognizes that she and Avraham are husband and wife, he castigates Avraham for not telling him, and nonetheless showers him with gifts, and Avram and Sarah return to Canaan quite wealthy. Now, Ramban Nachmanides, one of the Torah commentators, a significant Torah commentator, says that Avraham did the wrong thing by asking Sarah to say that they were brother and sister, and by going down to Egypt in the first place. If God sent him to Canaan, then he should have stayed, toughed it out, and he had no business, according to the Ramban, jeopardizing Sarah by telling them that she was his sister. You could argue, it could be debated, in fact, the going down to going out of Israel in case of a famine is written elsewhere that one is allowed to do that if the famine is so serious, but the person has to come back when things are better. And whether Avraham did the right thing or not is debated. As I said, the Ramban says he did the wrong thing. Others say he didn't do the best possible thing in that situation, but he was doing what we call hishtadlus, which means through his own effort trying to handle a difficult situation, and he did it. I don't want to dwell on that. I just want to say that that episode is a little bit on the negative side, and so is the friction between the shepherds of Avraham and the shepherds of Lot, which led to Avraham and Lot parting ways. And then you have Lot's capture, and the Torah tells us about the battle of the four kings and the five kings, and Avraham joining the battle in order to free his captive nephew. And there are high points there as well. And then you have the Brit Bein HaBetarim, the covenant of the pieces. Before that, you have the episode of Sarai giving over her handmaiden Hagar to Avraham to produce a child for him, since she was not able to give him a child. And there are some negative experiences there. Commentaries discuss and debate those issues as well. But it's not all perfect. Let's leave it at that, because the point is that the Torah tells things like it is, and that means it does not glorify our ancestors when we need to learn lessons from their behavior, even if it was less than perfect. I think that's an important point in the Sedra. Then you have, towards the end, God's command to Avraham to walk before him and be tamim, whole, perfect, however you want to interpret the word tamim. It's an introduction to the command of Brit Milah, and this is something which obviously is a very strong point in Judaism, and something that we have suffered in different times in Jewish history because of Brit Milah, because the Greeks decided that it was a mutilation of the body and banned it. Sort of reminds you a little bit of what happened recently in San Francisco, where there was a move to ban circumcision as well. So we haven't finished with that idea. And basically our view of circumcision is a reminder from God that it is in our hands to finish our physical form, and therefore we should learn that it is in our hands to complete our spiritual form. We are not born as is. We have to work hard with what we have on all different kind of levels to be better and better people. And Brit Milah symbolizes that. Of course, it's a mitzvah on its own, and it has all kind of ramifications. The fact that it's in on the organ of reproduction is significant, because then it is the combination of a man and a woman into a married couple, which becomes the result. No, that's not a good word. Let me backtrack a second. The mitzvah of Brit Milah we speak of in such glowing terms that women say, well, if it's so important, why isn't it for us too? Why is it only boys that get circumcised? Why didn't everybody be born with an extra flap of skin on the end of the nose and a religious ceremony and surgery to remove that flap of skin would be the sign of the covenant between God and the people of Israel. Why specifically on the male sex organ? I believe part of the answer is that being on that organ means we're not talking about men as opposed to women. We're talking about the human being as the combination of male and female that he once was created and then separated and commanded to rejoin. And to me, that's part of the significance in the location of Brit Milah. Brit Milah is not just a ceremony and surgery at 8 days old. It is a lifetime project of parents to raise their children, boys as well as girls, as good people and as good Jews. And that's part of the mitzvah, as evidenced by the fact that the father at the brit follows the bracha on milah, circumcision, with the bracha of to enter the child into the covenant of Abraham, much more than just brit milah. It's a lifelong commitment. And we have talked more about that, and let's move on to something else at the moment. Let me use what little time is left to elaborate on an idea which I alluded to, but last year I wrote about it more. And that is that we are presented not with perfect, idealized ancestors, but with real people who did magnificently wonderful things, which we try to learn from and to emulate, and occasionally messed things up, which we are to learn from and not emulate. I'll jump to a different example, because I had a discussion earlier this week with somebody about whether Sarah Imenu was at fault for the way she treated Hagar, or she was justified. Let's go to an area which I think nobody would debate. Yaakov Avinu's favoring of Yosef, creating a jealousy with the brothers. This had disastrous results. The Medrash says clearly, you sold your brother into slavery. That is the reason that you will go down to Egypt and every year in the future say, we were slaves to Paro in Egypt. That sale of Yosef was obviously not engineered by Yaakov, but it certainly was not helped by the fact that he gave Yosef that beautiful coat, and he obviously loved him more than he did his other sons. This is Yaakov Avinu we're talking about, who in many other areas of behavior we learn from that as a model to emulate. Not this. This is something that the Shulchan Aruch warns us against, because of what happened with Yaakov Avinu. Not discussing his motives, just the fact. He treated Yosef a certain way. This created jealousy. It eventually led to the sale of Yosef into slavery, almost to his killing. And it affects the whole national character of the Jewish people. We have to learn positive lessons and negative lessons and be intelligent enough to distinguish between them. On that note, let me wish you Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtamea.